The madness of the last 4 days is behind us. I'll recap a good, not great weekend, which culminated in Houston surviving a nail-biter versus Texas Tech last night as we're down to the Sweet 16. The association lays in the weeds, swallowed up by the shadow of the tournament. Don't look now, but there is a wild and crazy race for the dreaded President's Trophy title in the NHL. Baseball is set to begin on Thursday as I'll take a look at the over-under win totals for the season and a significant trade by the Super Bowl champion Chiefs regarding one of their key defensive players. The final week of the first quarter of 2024 is upon us, and so is the latest action-packed podcast. It's all coming up, but first, this message. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right, no 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste, how could I forget, the taste, crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reel's here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reel's podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reel's as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels Podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. It's a huge week for yours truly as we close out another month with more of what you're looking for. Fast-paced, entertaining sports talk covering all of what's going on across the landscape as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first-timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Thursday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And now that the dust is settled, now that we can exhale from the last, if you want to go back to Tuesday with the first four games, Tuesday and Wednesday, have at it. But when we take a look at the last 96 hours plus, and we could finally just take one big sigh, exhale, to absorb everything that had taken place from the start of this tournament to right this very moment, I'll take a look at the big picture, which of course I'll get to, but I want to start off with this theme. And despite the fact you had some nail-biter games, especially last night with Houston, and we'll get to them in a second, but overall, with the first 48 games already in the books, it's been a very good tournament. Maybe very is a little strong. It's been pretty good. To say it's very good may be just a tick, a bit of an overstatement. But overall, it has not been great. Now, we've had some crazy finishes. And we've had some games that have gone down to the wire into overtime. And even into double overtime, for that matter. But all in all, after the first 2 days where you had the 3-11 seeds move on in the opening round there on Thursday, which led to think that this could have been a crazy 4 days altogether. And then we look back on Friday where you had the 2-12 seeds in Grand Canyon and James Madison move on. And then Yale with the big upset over Auburn as a 13 seed. And then after that, it just slowly but surely went off a cliff. And yes, you did have a couple of nail biters there with Creighton having to survive that game in double overtime against a game Oregon team. And then last night, of course, Houston just having to unbelievably overcome that three-point shot there at the end of regulation by Anderson Garcia. And I thought that that was going to be a death knell for Houston, because to come back from that, I get it that they're a one seed and they've been pretty much in front all year long. But Houston is the type of team that has shown you they could score. And even though they're a more tough-minded defensive team, as we've seen throughout the course of this year, and even over the last few years, dating back to them making it to the Final Four in 2021, but I thought that that was going to be a tough sledding of an overtime for them, considering that shot, dagger, and it was just crazy there in the final seconds of that game. But Houston, to go along with the other three number one seeds, now as I take the 30,000-foot view of the tournament so far, Houston, although there's always going to be that one game, there's always going to be that test that's going to really put forward to your team, your mettle, toughness, etc. And Houston has gone away. I should say gone away. It's too strong. Houston has taken that test and passed it. Where they go from here is going to be a different story. And even though this may bode well for a Cougar team that if they do go to a Final Four, and let's say they do win the whole thing, they can look back on the game last night against Texas Tech. And usually a team going through this journey to win six games and to be the last team standing to cut the nets down, they'll always have that one game to refer to as this was the one that set the stage for what lied ahead the rest of this tournament. Now, of course, we have to wait and see how this is going to play out. But we could say that for Houston. We can't say that for the other 3-1 seeds, because they just literally blew the doors off of their opponents. And the one that's going to really stick out is Purdue. UConn, we've seen this last year. Now, mind you, they were a 4 seed going to a national championship. But UConn, no surprise, as they were in Brooklyn here in the East and they won their 2 games pretty convincingly. And same for UNC, as they beat in the second game Michigan State. No surprise there, as Tom Izzo was pretty much one and done after winning the first game against Mississippi State on Thursday. But take UConn and North Carolina aside, but Purdue could be that team that finally gets to a Final Four with the head coach Matt Painter and obviously Zach Edey, All-American, first team, etc. So Purdue could be a team to watch here. And we talked about this last Monday as far as them having the easy road to a Final Four, considering the other three brackets were pretty much either toss-ups or even a tougher task for UConn, as I discussed there last week. So all the number ones are intact. Houston had a bit of a tough road there, as we talked about last night. UNC, UConn, no shock there. But Purdue, not to say that they've also been a surprise, but considering their tournament history, obviously last year as a 1-16, losing in the opening round to Fairleigh Dickinson, and who knows, are they going to be on that path similar to Virginia when they lost the 1-16 matchup in 2018, bounced back with a national title in 2019 the following year? So I'll have to, of course, wait and see how this is all going to shape up. But that's what you got there with the one seeds. And that's what we have there pretty much when it comes to the rest of the tournament. You don't have that surprise Cinderella, unless you want to say NC State and give it up for them and what they did. And you also have a 6 seed in Clemson, which surprised a few people. And granted that when you look at Clemson in their bracket, it wasn't much of a shock, because it's not as if they beat this stellar opponent or a team that had no shot for Clemson to win. And Clemson right now, you would think, a little gas in their tank. Baylor, we understand that their recent history, winning a national title just 3 years ago, obviously not the same team, but knowing that they have a little bit of a pedigree, and for Clemson to beat Baylor and move on, your two unlikely teams that have made it this far are NC State and Clemson. Everything else is pretty much chalk when you take a look at all the brackets, and we'll break it down in a second. And that's why the tournament has been pretty good not very good and certainly not great. And you've had your handful of games that have gone down to the wire and have been crazy, topsy-turvy, even going back to Yale and Auburn, how that unfolded for the Bulldogs in order for them to move on to the next round. And then obviously they got whacked in the second round matchup, as we saw there yesterday. But for Clemson, let's see where they go. Same for NC State. And NC State obviously had a very big performance, and it also helped that Oakland beat Kentucky, which I haven't even talked about, and I'll get to the SEC overall. But NC State and everything that they've done here over the first two games of this tournament, and they were backed up by their big player, especially in the game against Oakland, because they needed every ounce and every bit of, what was it, DJ Burns' performance in order for them to advance and go on to the Sweet 16. But other than that, this is what we have here. You have a lot of ones, twos, threes are still intact. I know Kentucky was out, and that's just a terrible performance by them. Now, give it up to Oakland. I know the kid, Gelke, hit 10 threes in the game. And even in the loss yesterday, 6 of 17 from the field, 22 points. And all of his shots that were made were behind the three-point stripe. So you're going to live and die by the three, as we all know. But for this tournament now, as we look forward to Sweet 16, and I'll talk about that more on Thursday's podcast. But when we look at where we're at now, and I'm sure there may be some people that would have liked to seen a lot of these teams advance, whether it was Grand Canyon or James Madison, maybe even Yale for that matter, or the 3-11 seeds that were able to prevail there on Thursday and were going to move on to the next round, but they weren't able to make it out of that, other than NC State, of course, as we know. But the Oregons of the world, who had that performance against Creighton that went into double overtime, and they had to sweat it out and do whatever it took for them to win to advance to the Sweet 16. That's the Blue Jays that I'm referring to. And then, of course, I mentioned Oregon. The other one seed, or excuse me, the 11 seed was Duquesne, and they weren't able to get out of their game there on Saturday. But for the way the tournament has broken, and I get it that you don't have Kentucky there out, but you still have a lot of two seeds there. You still have a lot of the three seeds still intact. My Final Four blown up into smithereens, especially the one bracket where we had Kentucky going, or I had, I should say, going all the way to the final before losing to North Carolina. So that one blown to smithereens before I could even go to sleep there or even have dinner come Thursday night. But I have my other three brackets still intact, with Creighton as well as North Carolina and Iowa State moving on. But do you like the tournament where you have most of the cream of the crop that's still there? Obviously, all the one seeds are intact. And when we take a look at 2 years ago where we saw that Final Four, and I've addressed this several times here over the last few weeks, would you prefer to have that Final Four to where you have the teams that are the mainstays, whether it be the Blue Bloods or whether it be the teams that were to be expected to go far, and have that clash of the Titans between those top schools when it's all said and done, a la North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, Villanova of 2 years ago? Or do you want it to where you have a scenario of last year where all the one seeds were out before you got to the Elite Eight, all of the top-ranked teams seemed to be gone by the time you got to the Elite Eight, to where you had a 4, a 5, a 9, or I think you had 2 5s and a 9 last year, where it was FAU, Miami, San Diego State, and UConn. So the highest seed you had to go into the Final Four was UConn at 4, and we all know they won the national championship. Well, this time around, you're not going to have it to where it was last year, to where you had Cinderellas left and right. The glass slipper was being fitted on 3 of the 4 schools that made it to a Final Four, where this year, as I mentioned, the lowest seed you have is an 11 in NC State. Can they carry that to a regional final, and dare I even say a Final Four? Same for Clemson, for that matter. Because after that, you're going to have teams that, in all likelihood, were going to be expected to go far. All the one seeds that I mentioned, you still have plenty of top seeds, whether it is Marquette, who was able to survive there yesterday, or what was it, a couple nights ago? No, against Colorado 2 days ago, excuse me. And Colorado obviously had a very good tournament, that crazy game against Florida there to open it up, and then to have it come down to the wire for the most part, although Marquette had pretty much the game in hand, but Colorado definitely showed a lot of fight. with their participation here in this tournament. And when we take a look at all these regions, here's what you have. You have 1, 2, 3, and 5 in the East, and a very interesting rematch. Think about this. UConn, San Diego State, up in Boston, TD Garden, to kick us off on the Sweet 16 for the Huskies to go up against the Aztecs in a rematch of the championship game here in a regional semifinal. You got to wonder whether or not that the Aztecs are going to be, of course, they'll be game, but can exact some revenge here. Granted, it's not in a championship setting, but that to me, right off the bat, is one of the more fascinating games that you have going into the weekend. And we'll talk about that more come Thursday. And then you have the 2 and the 3 where it's Illinois and Iowa State going at it. So you have a 1, 2, 3, and 5 coming out of the East. In the West, we know about North Carolina. Then you have Arizona and Clemson coming out of that region, where you have Alabama also going up against North Carolina in that bracket out West, where they'll be playing in the Staples Crypto.com arena. So you have a 1, a 2, a 4, and a 6 coming out of that region. In the Midwest, we talked about Purdue, of course, and you're going to have them go up against Gonzaga, which is a 5, and they beat Kansas, and that was no surprise. So for Kansas to lose to Gonzaga, and they got blown out, and we talked about Kansas, how they just faltered down the stretch of the regular season into the Big 12, and then obviously here, after winning the opening game against Samford, which you could argue whether or not Samford got jerked, and they did, because that was not a foul there at 90-89, which led to the 2 free throws that should have been a clean block, and the ball should have been going the other way for Samford. So even though they did not have 9 lives in this tournament, but they certainly got an extra life, because if Samford would have had the ball going the other way with a chance to take the lead and maybe even win the game, Kansas would have been 1 and done. So for the Jayhawks, I certainly don't feel sorry for them. And Gonzaga, they move on to face Purdue in the 1-5. And then you have Tennessee, who has also played pretty well here throughout the course of the season. And Dalton Kanek, as we all know, one of the top players in the country. They're going to go up against Creighton. So you have a scenario there where it's a 1, 2, 3, and 5. And then in the South, Houston and Duke, which is going to be a fantastic game. And Duke is just breezed by in these first couple of rounds, beating Vermont and then James Madison there yesterday. And then with Houston having to sweat out that game last night, going up against Duke, that's going to be a real big test for the Cougars to see whether or not that they could piggyback off of this win last night in overtime against Texas Tech to show that they are a true one seed and they can move on. And John Shire, the head coach of Duke, let's see if he could build his own legacy there as they could try to get to a regional final. And they will face either NC State or Marquette. We talked about Marquette's travels to get to this point. And then NC State, as we know, with the game there yesterday beating Oakland and them being pretty much the last remaining Cinderella here of this tournament, whether or not that they can make it to a regional final, which would be fascinating, because if Duke were to beat Houston, you'll have an ACC final with NC State going up against Duke. So that is your 4 regions. And again, a lot of 1s, a lot of 2s, a lot of 3s, a lot of top teams that are still in the mix here for a chance to get to a Final Four. And very little Cinderellas, which I kind of like that way. I understand a lot of people like to get the lower seeds there. They want to see if they could take a deep run into the tournament. But as you get deeper into the tournament, that's where the cream rises to the top. And as we saw there last year with UConn, granted that they were a 4 seed, but we know that they were a big-time team going into the tournament. And for this go-around to have a lot of the top teams still around, I think it's going to make for a better tournament and even a better regional in all the brackets, as well as the Final Four when we get to that, and we have to see who's going to be the last 4 standing. A week from today, we'll certainly break it down and take it from there. But the big winners of this tournament so far, the Big East showed up and showed out. All 3 teams have advanced, so they've been a combined 6-0 to this point, and that was the argument last week for the St. John's and the Providences of the world for them not to get a bid, and we saw the Mountain West get all these bids to where they got 6 teams going in, and granted 2 of them made it into the play-in tournament, but only 1 team is left standing, and that's San Diego State. And it just shows that to what they did last year, making it all the way to a final, at least for them, here they are as the last team standing in the Mountain West, knowing that maybe that they had a little bit to prove here, to show that not just for the conference sake, but even for them to know that last year wasn't a fluke, and right now they will advance here to a Sweet 16 to go up against, ironically, as I mentioned earlier, the UConn Huskies in a rematch of the title game last year. And then you had the SEC, who the SEC got slaughtered here. And SEC, you're always going to think that they're going to have a lot of teams that are represent. We talked about Kentucky out on the street after the first day. And you would have thought that you could have had three teams that would have made it at least out of the eight that made it. But Texas A&M was not able to put up an upset against the Cougars last night. So to think you only have Alabama and Tennessee are the only two teams out of the SEC that has made it this far. And who would have thought, with Auburn getting bounced by Yale and obviously the Wildcats there losing to Oakland, and that was a shock beyond belief. And I have to say this about Calipari here. We know that he's a top recruiter. He's not going to be mentioned in the same breath amongst the big-time coaches all time in the sport. And even though he has a big resume dating back to his days in Massachusetts, and yes, he did finally win a national title in 2012, where Anthony Davis led the Wildcats to a championship that year. But for a guy who's made it to a lot of Final Fours and championship games and even had an undefeated team in 2014 before they lost to Wisconsin. Remember that team that were unable to be able to get themselves to a situation where they could have matched the Indiana Hoosiers as the last team to go undefeated to a national title? That was back in 1976. But for Calipari, who has had some heartache here, and I get it, the De'Aaron Fox team, they made it to a regional final and lost, what was that, in 2019, I believe? And that was just a tough break for them. But Calipari, he's got to take some hits here. Not only did he not make it out of this round or this tournament out of the first round, but remember, a couple years ago to St. Peter's as a 2 seed. And this go around, he was a 4 seed. For him to get bounced out of the tournament here 2 of the last 3 years as big-time favorites, I don't want to hear transfer portals and the sport is a lot different than what it once was. And yes, is that the truth? It is. But if you're John Calipari and if you're Kentucky, one of the blue bloods in this nation, and we all know that the university, fan base, etc., it's championship or nothing. It's not even a thing where, hey, let's make it to a Sweet 16 or even a Final Four. And a Final Four is something you could put a feather in the cap. I get it. But Kentucky, just like Duke, just like North Carolina, it's about winning championships. It's not about trying to make it to Final Fours. And for Calipari to not make it out 2 of the last 3 years, and this is the first round, says a lot about him, his program, coaching, etc. And I get it. Sometimes you get into a hot team like Gehlke hitting 10 threes. Understood. But if you're John Calipari, a guy who is reputable amongst the top coaches in the nation, and for him to not be able to make it to a second round again, not a good look, and certainly does fall on Calipari as far as his resume goes overall. So let me see. Is there anything else I could talk about here with these first couple of days? Talking about Clemson, only one double-digit seed, as I mentioned, with NC State. Talk about Houston hanging on for dear life. That's pretty much it. And that just goes to show how much the tournament, although, like I mentioned one last time, it's been pretty good. And you've had your moments with these games down the stretch, especially those opening 2 days. Because you had a lot of double-digit seeds move on to at least play in another game. And what we saw there, out of all those seeds, the 3-11s on Thursday, the 2-12s and the 1-13 there on Friday, only one team made it out alive, and that's the Wolfpack of NC State. And now we'll get to break it all down come Thursday with the matchups. We'll talk it all on the podcast when we reconvene later on in the week. But that's what we have here when we talk about March Madness. And it definitely had some madness and definitely was some craziness there. But overall, it's been good. Now, as far as the women's game, I haven't really followed closely. I know you still have a lot of the big teams that are still intact. And now, as we get into this week, we will get to hope for an LSU-Iowa regional final, which would be juicy to say the least. And then we'll see how that fares, as well as some of the other teams. We know South Carolina, we would think that they're going to go back and make it to a regional final. Let's see what's going to happen with this LSU-Iowa matchup, which I know will be fascinating for a lot of people, including yours truly. But we'll pay more attention, or at least I'll pay more attention to the women's game here now as we get deeper into this tournament. And how about Dustin May, the coach of FAU, who went to a Final Four last year and was unable to get out of alive to a Sweet 16 this year, gets the Michigan job. We know Juwan Howard got axed, fired there, and they had a big run there a couple of years ago where they were one of the top seeds, not only in the country, but also in their bracket. But I believe they wanted to make it to a regional semi. They weren't able to get out of the regional final alive. Off the top of my head, I can't remember who they matched up with. But for Dustin May, he moves on to greener pastures as he's moves forward to go to Ann Arbor, to Michigan, to see what he could do there with the Wolverines. So kudos to him, as a lot of those young coaches, they will progress and continue to move forward. And for him to not be able to get out of the first round, let alone get to the second round or even a Sweet 16, Dustin May goes on to greener pastures there at the University of Michigan. So we'll continue to keep our eyes on some of the other coaching moves that will probably be talked about here over the course of the next week or so. So let me keep my high tops on. I'll go to the NBA, where it is very quiet. There is nothing really to even get into when we talk about the association. And I know that that may sting the diehard NBA fan, but really, what am I going to discuss here over the last few days that is going to be worthy to really roll the sleeves and get into when we talk about the association? Now, you do have an interesting development in the East as far as the 4, 5, and 6 seeds, and I'll get into that in a second. But when we talk about games, or we talk about certain things that have transpired here over the weekend, am I going to talk about Philly going into LA? And even though they beat the Clippers there yesterday, and you're going to see Russell Westbrook come back, and people are going to say, wow, what's the big deal about Russell Westbrook? Well, he's been a guy coming off the bench who's been the ultimate soldier and ultimate teammate, and he had that broken hand that a lot of people thought he was going to be out indefinitely, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. But he comes back actually probably 2 to 3 weeks sooner, as he'll be inserted in the lineup if he wasn't in last night. And I haven't checked that, and I will do so in a second. But for the Clippers, who have struggled here a little bit without him, and Kawhi Leonard, who had that back issue, although he's come back from that, but as they try to navigate their way in the Western Conference, but other than Westbrook coming back, and maybe another detail, let me just see if I can pull that up real quick when I look at my NBA notes here. But for the association, you know it's going to get swallowed up by the tournament. It's going to be all about the college game. And unless you had something crazy go on in the NBA, then we could really sink our teeth into. But that hasn't been the case. And let me take a look at the Clippers real quick before I move on. And right now, with the game last night that they played the Sixers and they lost last night, I know the Sixers, they played both the Lakers, which usually happens with the West Coast team, as they go play the Lakers and Sixers, one trip into LA. And last night you had the Sixers just blow out the Clippers in their building. And I know James Harden, I believe, is the first meeting since the trade. So I don't even, wow, the Clippers haven't played in Philadelphia this year? I thought they played earlier this year. Or maybe Harden didn't make the trip. But for Westbrook, who I think will be a big addition, especially down the stretch as they try to find their way here in a Western Conference, which is top heavy with the two young teams, Oklahoma and Minnesota, sandwiched in with Denver. As I look here, Westbrook has not come back, so I would think he's probably come back at some point throughout the course of this week. So we'll have to wait and see upon his return and what type of impact that he's going to have here for a Clipper team that's going to need it. And as far as the Sixers, yeah, they did split. They lost to the Lakers there on Saturday, I believe that was the game. But the NBA, as I said, it's going to be lost in the clouds here over the course of the next, I would say, week or so, once you get past the Sweet 16, and I'll take a look at the schedule to see if there's any intriguing matchups this week. But what we have here, let's go to the East. The 4, 5, and 6 seeds are intriguing here because the Bucks currently have a 3-game lead over the Cavaliers, and they've stumbled here down the stretch. And I know Donovan Mitchell is also out. Remember, he was out a while with the injury that he had, and now he has another injury, which is actually a little bit even dicier as I pull that up. So for the Cavaliers, who I thought to get the 2 seed was going to be important for them, because at least they could guarantee 2 home rounds before they get to a conference final. And right now, that is not going to be the case, because they're 3 games behind the Bucks in the standings when it comes to the Eastern Conference. But at least they do have a bit of a cushion. And when I say bit, it is the slightest bit. Because now you have a scenario where the Knicks are a half game behind the Cavaliers for the 3rd seed. Then you have Orlando a half game behind the Knicks for the 4th seed. So you have that 3-4-5 separated by 1 game. And I'm sure that they're going to want to have a situation to where they could have that 3-6 matchup, which will probably fare better if Miami and Philadelphia stay out of the, or stay in the playing scenario. Because if you are a 3 seed, you're going to go up against Indiana. And Indiana right now, they've been struggling a little bit. I know Tyrese Halliburton has been nursing that hamstring ever since he came back with that long stretch when he suffered that hamstring injury about a month ago. And for Orlando, who I know that they are in a 4-5 matchup, I'm sure they would want to at least have home court in the 1st round. So they're going to fight for that. And I get it. If you're a 3 seed, even if you do win that 3-6 matchup, you're going to face the Bucks in the next round, which that could be dubious to say the least if you're a young team like Orlando or even Cleveland for that matter. So that's a race that we're going to look at here down the stretch to see who's going to fall 3, 4, 5, because then you have Indiana, who is 2.5 games behind Orlando for the 5 seed. And then you have Miami outside looking in as a 7, half game behind the Pacers. And then also the Sixers, the same deal, half game behind them as they're both tied, Miami and Philadelphia, 39 and 32 in the East. Then you have the Bulls and Hawks after that, which to me, they're going to be afterthoughts, because those two teams, although you're going to see Bulls, Hawks playing scenario in Chicago, but they may be sacrificial lambs to either Miami or Philadelphia when it's all said and done, if it does happen to fall that way. And who knows, you may get another Bulls at Heat playing scenario where you're going to have to play to get into the tournament, as we saw last year where the Heat were on the ropes with the final 3 minutes in that game against the Bulls down in Miami before they went on that long run at, what was it, 90-87 before the Bulls just faltered down the stretch. And we all understand that the Heat went on that run to an NBA final. So that's what you have there in the East. That's a race we'll have to look at. And then, of course, in the West, with Denver, who are now currently in 1st place, mind you, a game in hand for Oklahoma City, but at 50-21, they do have the top spot. Oklahoma City, 49-21, Minnesota, 49-22, and they've navigated their stretch here, the Timberwolves, without Karl Anthony Towns. So for Oklahoma, Minnesota, you want to try to get the 1 seed. And if Denver does get the 1 seed, obviously all roads are going to go through the Mile High City. But even if they don't, let's say if Denver goes back to 3rd, you know that they're not going to be scared to play a Game 7, whether it be in Minnesota or Oklahoma City, in a conference final or even in a conference semifinal for that matter. So we'll obviously take a look at that. And then from 4, 5, and 6, you have the Clippers, the Pelicans, and Phoenix. Now, Phoenix are 2 games behind the Pelicans for the 5 seed. The Pelicans are just a half game behind the Clippers for the 5th seed. Not that that means a lot, because if you're going to be a 5 seed, you're still going to have to go on the road. So you're not going to have to worry or try to fight for home court advantage. If anything, a 4 or 5 seed could get you Denver if the season ended today. So maybe that's one matchup you'd want to avoid. And then your 7-10, Sacramento and Dallas, both at 41-29. They have a comfortable 3-game in the loss lead over the Lakers. And then the Warriors, they are now 2 in the loss and 2.5 behind the Lakers for the 9th seed. And as I talked about ad nauseum, you may have a Golden State LA Laker playing scenario where one team is going to be gone for the spring and summer. And now there's been talk about Steph Curry with his minutes in a game, I believe over the weekend, or if not last night, where Steve Kerr had to address some issues, whether or not Steph Curry with minutes, is he holding him back? Is this a scenario where he's trying to conserve him for the stretch run and maybe even some controversy of the Warriors just laboring here throughout the course of these last couple of weeks? even though they beat the Lakers there last Saturday, but this is not a Warrior team that I've said before, and I'll say again, they're not going to be long for this postseason, and to me, that's not going on the limb by any stretch. But for the Warriors, in fact, that game was last night at Golden State. Now they go down to Miami to play the Heat tomorrow. But for the Warriors, they are just trying to get to the finish line and then maybe even hope, winging a prayer to beat the Lakers, and then we'll have to beat the winner of either Sacramento, Phoenix, if they drop that far down, Dallas, etc. That's what you have in the association here. And as far as games this week, let's see if there's anything juicy that we could at least look forward to before we get to the tournament there on Thursday. So tonight, you have Boston and Atlanta, Detroit, the Knicks, Brooklyn, Toronto. Nothing really to even get into tonight as far as the schedule goes. Tomorrow, you have Golden State and Miami, as I mentioned. The Lakers go to Milwaukee. That's a TNT game. I'm sure people are going to be geeked up about that. Sacramento, Dallas, so there's an interesting matchup. I know not sexy overall because it's not as if they're two powerhouse teams, but considering that Sacramento and Dallas are literally at a flat-footed tie, that will be big to see where they fall in seeding. Now, Sacramento will host Philadelphia tonight, so they're going to go on a back-to-back, so that may, and even Dallas has to go to Utah, so both teams are going to be off a back-to-back. You would think that will favor Sacramento more only because they're home and Dallas is on the road, so that's something to keep in mind. And then for the games on Wednesday, you have not much even to chew on there. Philadelphia, Cleveland, just games that matter, people. That's all I'm looking at. Clippers in Orlando, Lakers at Indiana, Dallas at Sacramento. That's later in the week. Why am I looking at games later in the week? All right, Wednesday. My apologies. Golden State or Orlando as they go through their Florida trip. LA, the Clippers at Philadelphia. So look at that. They just played two nights ago. And I said last night, but I was actually two nights ago because obviously if Philadelphia played on Saturday, although they could do a back-to-back scenario, but they did a back-to-back with the Lakers. Day off yesterday, and now they play the Kings there up in Sacramento tonight. Yeah, not a lot to really chew on. That's what you have here in an NBA. Phoenix at Denver Wednesday night. All right, fine. ESPN doubleheader where the first game is the Clippers in Philadelphia. That's what you have in the association. So, again, it's going to lay in the weeds here until we probably get to next week at this time, April. And then at that point, we're looking at the final 2 weeks of the season. And then I also got to give props. I haven't forgotten about this team. And they're going to play, I saw on the schedule here, I have to go back and look. But I guess you have to throw the Rockets into the mix. They've won 8 in a row. Give it up for Ime Udoka and his young squad because now they're putting some pressure on the Warriors. And would I expect the Rockets to sneak in through the back door into the playing scenario where the Warriors will just fade into oblivion? I don't want to start putting dirt on the Warriors just yet, but you have to wonder, are the Rockets, with this run, can they continue to keep this pace up? Because generally with runs like this, even with a young team who don't know their ass from their elbow, they're going to hit a stretch here where they're going to run out of gas. And give it up for the way the Rockets have played here. Now, let me look at the schedule one more time to see the Rockets. I think they have an intriguing game there on Wednesday. Rockets have Portland tonight. And Wednesday they go to Oklahoma City. So that's actually a pretty interesting game. Because OKC, as we know, they're fighting for the top spot there in the West. But looks like with Portland coming into their building, could be 9 in a row before going to Oklahoma City on Wednesday. Who knows? And with this Southern swing here for the Warriors, Miami and Orlando, two teams that are fighting for playoff spots or playoff positioning, I should say. This could be a tough stretch. Now, they go to Charlotte after that on Friday. Later on in the week, that's Golden State. Yeah, they do play Charlotte. So you have some interesting developments there with the bottom part of the Western Conference there. And even in the middle, when it comes to the East and obviously the top spots in the West, that's what you have there in the NBA as of right this moment. Now, let me pivot and lace up my skates to see what's happening on the ice. And we have a lot that's going on there. And I'm not going to say that this came out of nowhere, people, but when I took a look at the lay of the land as far as the National Hockey League, and I get it, it's the dreaded President's Trophy winner. And usually President's Trophy teams do not win Stanley Cups. All you got to do is just look to the team last year, the Bruins, and I've said this a million times, had the most points and most wins in NHL regular season history, and what happened to them? Didn't even make it out of the first round. So this may be a distinction that a lot of teams don't want to have to hang their hat on, but this is a race here that you have how many teams? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams that are separated by 1 point for the President's Trophy in the NHL. The top team, and it's a tie, the top team being the Rangers and Canucks, East and West, both with 98, and then these are your teams at 97. And that's 5 teams. Think about that. Florida, Boston, Colorado, Dallas, and I'm missing a team, Carolina. And think about this. Your races in the divisions where Florida and Boston, both with 97 points, but the Panthers have more wins. So that's going to count in the long run. And that's after the tiebreaker. I don't know how the season series went with these teams, so that I have to take a look at. Then you have the Rangers separated by 1 point over the Hurricanes. And Carolina's played well. I know Evgeny Kuznetsov went back to Washington for the first time, and I know that was an emotional return for him there over the weekend. Colorado and Dallas, flat-footed there, 97 points, and Colorado's been scorched as far as a team that's just red hot. 9 in a row that they've won, and Nathan MacKinnon, who knows? He could end up being your MVP when it's all said and done. But Dallas has kept pace. Winnipeg, who was part of that 3-team race that seemed to be in ties forever, whether they had 89 points or 93 points, what happened to them? They did beat the Rangers last Tuesday, but they lost to the Devils and Islanders here Thursday and Saturday, and then they lost to Philadelphia yesterday. So they've hit the skids here to where they've fallen off and are now 4 points behind the Central as far as the top spot there. And even with 2 games in hand, you would think that Vancouver should make it home with the top spot there out in the Pacific. They have a 10-point lead over the Edmonton Oilers as of right this moment. But you have all those teams, 7 of them, separated by 1 point for the President's Trophy there in the NHL, which will be an interesting race. And I'm sure there are 7 fan bases who probably don't even want that President's Trophy. And maybe if you're a team like Dallas or even Vancouver who may want to get that top spot overall, which to me means absolutely zilch, nada, nothing. But for those who want to rally around that, God bless you. But I know if it's my team that was in the chase for the President's Trophy, I don't want it. I will definitely pass on that. But those are races that we got to look at. And of course, I went through the divisions. I'll get to the wild card here in just a second. I just want to make sure I don't miss anything when it comes to some news and notes. And yes, there is one thing that I'll get to in a moment. But as far as the wild card scenario goes, you still have Florida, Boston, Toronto. Those are your top 3 seeds, as we know. Your wild cards are Tampa, who's only 4 points behind the Maple Leafs, so they could overtake them and put Toronto in the wild card mix. So that's something to keep in mind. And then the Capitals, who have played well here down the stretch, who are going to be without Tom Wilson because the game there on Wednesday night where he struck a Maple Leaf player in the mouth, accidental or not, to me it was borderline intentional watching it. And Wilson, one of the tough guys in the league, who I think is more, I don't want to say he's a paper tough guy by any stretch, but when I think of heavyweights and tough guys, to me he doesn't belong in the ranks of Ryan Reeves. I'll even throw in Matt Rempe just for the sake of this discussion. The Matthew Oliviers, the Nicholas Deloriers, guys like that. Because Wilson, to me, he's a guy that he picks and chooses. He's a guy that will steer clear from those true heavyweight tough guys. And Wilson, he's going to be on the shelf for 6 games. I believe that suspension started just a couple days ago. But for the Capitals, they've been playing well. And they've actually snuck up on everybody because they were near the bottom of the Atlantic Division. And here they are, thrusted right into this playoff scenario where they're only a point ahead of the Red Wings there for the second wild card spot. Then you have the Islanders, who had a nice win against Winnipeg on Saturday in their building. And what did they follow up with? A stinker at home as it got shut out by the Devils. So that just goes to show you how the Islanders' last few weeks have gone. And speaking of the Devils, with that win, they're just 1 point behind the Islanders. So if you want to just keep tabs there, Sabres 3 points behind, or I should say 1 point behind the Islanders. Well, let me get this straight here. 1 point behind the Devils, 2 points behind the Islanders, and overall 6 points behind the Capitals for the final spot. So I do have to throw them in the mix when it comes to the wild card scenario in the East. And then out West, we know about Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Edmonton, as we know. But then you have the Kings, 4 points behind the, or let me see if I got that right, 3 points behind the Oilers for the second place spot in the Pacific. And then you have Nashville, who has the first spot in the wild card, 88 points, followed by the Golden Knights with 83. And think about this, they are 2 points behind the Kings, so they can flip-flop with the Kings as far as wild card positioning goes. And then you have the Blues, 4 points behind Vegas, Minnesota, 6 points behind, 2 points behind the Blues. And then it falls off from there where Calgary is, I won't even count Calgary. They're a dozen points behind the Golden Knights for the second wild card spot in the West. And that's what you have there in the National Hockey League. So we'll certainly keep our eyes on that as we're now into the latter stage, the, I'm not going to say the home stretch this yet because you still have teams that have 69 games. Once you get to the final 10 games of the season, that's when we'll really get into the home stretch. And also for the NBA, similar to them, as a lot of their teams have played in upwards of 70, 72 games in the association. Now let's get to baseball. As the season, I got it underway there on Wednesday of last week where the Dodgers and Padres played. And I will say this real quick about Shohei Ohtani. Go back to Thursday's podcast as I really unpack that whole scenario as far as what's going to happen here. And he's going to address the media today. I said it then, and you'll have to go back and watch the tape. It's on my YouTube channel, at JReels. I have about a six-minute segment on it. So you don't have to go back and listen to the whole podcast or go to the timestamp to see where my thoughts on Shohei Ohtani is with this whole gambling scenario with the former interpreter. But the one thing I will say is that I hope that he addresses the media for ample time. And I'm not saying 5 minutes. Give it 15, 20 minutes, or even as long as it takes, which that's not going to happen. But answer all the questions now. Have your statement off the bat. Then answer the questions. Give it 15 minutes. I know the Dodger PR people are going to be right there holding his hand and the new interpreter, etc. But if this thing is going to be 2 minutes, it's going to be a joke. And I'll just leave it at that. Go back and listen to everything that I said on Thursday's podcast or certainly on my YouTube channel at JReels for a snippet of my thoughts on Ohtani and what the Dodgers and he should do with this process with the media. And remind you, this is the first time he's meeting the media here stateside. Now, this was all unfolding when it happened in Korea. So now that he's going to get a taste of this, 3 days before the opener of the season here come Thursday, now he's going to have to address it. So let's see how that goes. And you know I'm going to talk about that a lot come Thursday, or certainly on my YouTube channel with my shorts. So you have to stay tuned for that. But with baseball, in essence, raising the curtain on their season come Thursday, you know I have the over-unders to get to, and let's get to that right now. Now, I'll pick them on the baseball preview, which I'll have Thursday morning, bright and early. I'll have my podcast in the early portion of the afternoon of everything that's happening in sports, but I'm going to have an isolated baseball preview that will be up Thursday morning. And I'll have my over-unders, my predictions, my Met preview, etc. You will not be shortchanged about the 2024 Major League Baseball season. But here are your numbers as we go through it. The top number in the sport, no shock, the Dodgers at 103.5. And the only other team that is above 100 are the Braves at 101.5. Then from there, you only have two teams in the 90s where generally you have anywhere between 3 to 4. And I'll even give you a little bit of a tipping of the hand from yours truly. If you had to guess which two teams are those, I'm sure you would have probably thought it's got to be Houston and the Yankees, right? Well, that is the case. Houston, 93.5. Yankees, 90.5. But then in the back of your mind, you probably would have thought, well, wait a second. The Orioles won 101 games last year, and they're not ranked in the 90s at any point, they are not. Their number is 89.5. So with that young core and with their ace and one Corbin Burns in the mix, you would have thought that number was higher. Well, there you go, people. You already know which team I'm heading to as far as one of my overs for Thursday. You're going to have to listen to the rest of it come on Thursday's MLB preview. So that was a shock there. And I'm not going to, well, what the hell. I'll go through the rest of this list real quick. Phillies, 89.5. Rangers, the defending World Series champs, 88.5. Twins, 87.5. I think that's a little high if you ask me, but weak division. Mariners, 87.5. Blue Jays, 86.5. Cardinals, 84.5. The Rays, 84.5. I'm not going to that well. 2 years ago, I picked them as an under. I won. Last year, went back, picked them as an under and lost. So, Third time will not be the charm there. Cubs, 83.5. Diamondbacks, 83.5. The defending National League champs, I might add. Giants, 83.5. Padres, 83.5. Mets, 81.5. It's probably about right, but something tells me they'll be below that. Mainly because of their pitching staff. Reds, 81.5. Tigers, 80.5. Guardians, 79.5. Wow, they're thinking the Tigers will go up that high. Red Sox, 77.5. Marlins, 77.5. Brewers, Pirates, 76.5, 75.5, respectively. Royals, 73.5. Angels, 72.5. And then to round it out, a precipitous drop. Nationals, 66.5. White Sox, 61.5. And remember, I picked the Nationals as an under last year. Thought that they were going to just bottom out. And they actually went over. White Sox, 61.5. How the mighty have fallen there. Not that they, you know, not that they're the mighty. But at the same time, they were a team that were expected to do a lot, especially in the early part of this century, or excuse me, this decade from the 2020s on. And they have, oof. Then you have Rockies, 59.5, and Athletics, 57.5. Got a few there other than the Brewers. Don't know who I'm going to select as my other five, but you have to stay tuned for the podcast. And I'll also have it recorded. Excuse me one more time. I'll also have it recorded here on video so you could definitely see my baseball preview again when we get to March 28th, the kickoff of the season. And then lastly, I think that's it for baseball. Let me just double check. Oh no, how can I forget? You had a couple of interesting notes here to discuss. One being JD Martinez. How can I forget? 1 year, $12 million. He's not going to be ready for the opener. He says he's going to take his time. And I get it. He had to wait till what? Thursday to sign on the dotted line for the Mets. All right. Gives them an upgrade. A little length and maybe even some protection for Alonso. Because after Alonso, and I understand you have Francisco Alvarez, but he's a free swinger, young player, although he has a lot of power. But I think slotting Martinez after Alonso, and then you could put Alvarez and maybe even Beatty for that matter. And bringing in Martinez hurts Mark Vientos, who actually had a very good spring, hit a home run there on Saturday before he got sent down in that Met-Yankee game, or I think that was on Friday. So Vientos, again, we would like to see the young guys, and even though with Martinez in the fold and a guy who had 33 homers and 103 RBIs in a limited amount of games last year, hopefully he can stay healthy. He's a guy that obviously adds a lot of experience, professional at-bats. On top of that, also a World Series champion, as we know, with the Red Sox in 2018. Not to say the Mets are probably going to be anywhere near that, but brings a little bit of presence, and I get it. It's a last-minute signing, pretty much a bargain basement deal. They waited the market out until we got to this point, and Martinez, let's see. I'm sure he's going to get a lot of reps here as we get into the first part of April, and I'm sure he's probably going to get brought up at some time after that. So we'll have to wait and see. And then you have Brandon Woodruff, who's going to be on the shelf the whole year. He, the Brewer hurler, where he got off to a great start last year and had to miss the rest of the year with just shoulder inflammation and just issues abound, to where he actually got surgery in October. Thought maybe he'd be ready, but he's going to be far from it, to the point where he's foregone the 2024 year and will come back next year. So that's a huge blow for a Brewer team who, as I mentioned, Corbin Burns is now in Baltimore. Your closer, Devin Williams is on the shelf with those stress fractures in his back that you're not going to see for about 3 months. And this Brewer team does not have a big offense, had some good pitching, even to go with Freddie Peralta. But now that you have two-thirds of that out, one on the East Coast and one that's going to be on the shelf, looks like it's going to be a long year for the Brewers there. And that's just a tough break overall. And then speaking of Baltimore, Peter Angelos, a longtime owner, who now it's bestowed upon the son, John Angelos. And of course, think about this. He's part ownership because we understand that there's been a group that has bought the team and has a majority stake in the Baltimore Orioles, which is great for their fan base because, as we all know, the Angeloses could be very thrifty, a group that, with his son, was not trustworthy when it comes to signing their players and wanting to develop that area to make it more of an attraction. We understand that the ballpark speaks for itself, but they want to add a lot more and infuse some life around the brick warehouse there in right field, etc. But with all that being said, Peter Angelos, who was 94 years of age, died over the weekend. So thoughts, condolences go out to the Angelos family, the Orioles, Major League Baseball, as he transitions. So now let's see what the Orioles, if they're going to rally around this, maybe win one for the old owner. Let's see. Obviously, we haven't gotten to opening day just yet. And then lastly, with the NFL, L'Jarius Sneed, a guy who was non-tendered as far as the franchise tag goes, and a lot of people thought maybe he would be franchised, but that was not the case. He's going to be traded within, I would say, days, or maybe even hours for that matter, to the Tennessee Titans in exchange for a third round and seventh round pick this upcoming draft. And at that point, he'll be paid as one of the top cornerbacks in the sport. And that's a big loss. They had to pay Chris Jones, the defensive anchor of that line, and pretty much the heart and soul of that defense. And they brought Drew Tranquil, who was another guy that has made some big strides there in that Chief defense, but you would think that they're going to bank on saving their money to pay when the time comes. Trent McDuffie, who's a very good corner in his own right and one of the up-and-coming corners in the sport. So I could understand why that Sneed was going to be too rich for their blood. And in this case, we'll get at least a couple of draft picks, including a third rounder for them. So maybe they could draft a corner along the way to replace Sneed. But that is a big get for the Titans, who are trying to rebuild their team, as we know. Obviously, with the quarterback position with Will Levis, and see where they go from there. And football right now is going to not be out in the wilderness, because we all know it's a 24-hour news cycle with the Shield. But a month from around this time is going to be the draft. So in about 2 weeks or so, you're going to get a lot of rumblings and a lot of stuff of who's moving up as far as their stock goes, who's dropped down considerably as the NFL continues to plow along here this offseason, more than a month removed from the Super Bowl. And here we are, just days away from April and a little bit more than a month from the draft. I don't even know where it's taking place this year. Not that that really matters, if you ask me. But the NFL, even with that trade, and obviously with Aaron Donald retiring last week, that was big news. And a lot of the free agency period that we had there in the middle of last month now has really quieted down. So Sneed is the latest here of a newsworthy item throughout the NFL. So obviously I had to bring that up, and that's a big pickup for Tennessee as they try to see if they can compete in what's now going to become a pretty interesting AFC South, because you have Houston with CJ Stroud and what they did, Indianapolis, the job that the coach Shane Steichen did, and the strides that they made even without Anthony Richardson as their quarterback. And you have Jacksonville, who fell off a cliff with Trevor Lawrence there in the latter part of their year. Again, not an overall sexy division, but you have some competition there. And I guess Tennessee had to do what they had to bring in a corner to go up against the likes of CJ Stroud, of Trevor Lawrence, and maybe even Anthony Richardson for that matter, now that the backup Gardner Minshew is in Las Vegas. So at least you have that for the AFC South, just to add a little bit more intrigue, as we still are more than a month away from the NFL draft. That'll do it, my good people. Another episode in the books. Thank you so much for stopping by, carving out precious moments out of your day to listen to what it is that I have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, please subscribe, rate, and review. Throw me a few stars, write a review. Like I mentioned at the very top, I would appreciate it. As you all know, I'm a full content creator full-time here, so it's not as if even if I wasn't full-time, I would still need all of the accolades, the reviews, etc. So please go ahead and do so on your favorite podcast platform or go to my YouTube channel. Give it a like, thumbs up, subscribe. I need to continue to build that platform as I have big and better things going on with that particular channel. Again, YouTube at JReels. And if you want to hit me up with a question, comment, suggestion, you could do so at the following on any of my socials: Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the JReels Podcast, Twitter, X, JReels1, just the number. Or the old-fashioned way, the JReels Podcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. This is the reason why I've gone full-time, because I want to push all my chips in the middle of the table, because I want to make the JReels Podcast and yours truly a household name. Because where else are you going to get all these sports in one podcast? And I get it that your niche podcast, whether it's in college basketball, baseball, NFL, I'm sure you could get that there, but you could get all that right here with nothing but passion, fire, fury, energy, with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the JReels Podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless, everybody. And until next time on the JReels Podcast, on the flip, baby.